Terry gets a little dud. No call to Mathieu. Foul line jumper. Mango got it! And a slam power dunk by Harrell.
Get your L's up, Cards fans. You're about to enter the Crunch Zone. Here are Crumb's Revenge,
Mike Lindsay,
and U of L Sheriff 50,
Mark Blankenship.
All right, the Crunch Zone is back. We survived the Duke game. This is Mike Lindsay, also known as Crumb's Revenge, and I'm joined by...
It's Drew, Master Drew on Twitter.
This is Joe Kelly at That Boy's Good.
Dave Lackford at Rivals D Lack.
We've got opinions on the Duke game. We're going to talk a little bit about NC State, and we're going to run with some dudes talking. It's the Crunch Zone coming at you right now. All right, Duke, blackout. It had all the makings for as much excitement as you can handle, except for the excitement part.
Just had to stay awake, right?
That's
right. What Bobby said today?
Yeah.
Just had to stay awake.
So what are some initial thoughts just on the game itself?
That was a really weird atmosphere in there, and I don't know if it's coming off of the bye week. I don't know if it's coming off of, you know, losing that close game at Clemson and then sitting for a week watching everybody else play, but it was a snoozer.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. Normally, you come in for a night game, especially like a Friday night, you've got a really charged atmosphere in there. People have been tailgating, hanging out, getting off work, ready for some excitement, and it seemed like it was going to be that way first drive of the game, but it really turned into a snoozer. And you know, part of that was the Duke game plan.
Mm-hmm.
I think they carried it. I think that was their intention.
Absolutely, it was. I mean, Dave and I talked about this on Saturday, I think, for a little bit. They came out and played, like, they switched and did 180 on what their game plan typically is, and they just drained the clock. It's the best thing to try to contain. You know, was it Michael Jordan that said, "You can't stop me, you can only try to contain me"? And that's what they did with Lamar.
We've all said it.
Right, right.
Any guy.
Right.
Right. Well, you know, they ran the Princeton offense. You know, Duke's a bunch of smart kids. They got a smart coach, and they came out with a good game plan, a boring game plan. I'm from Philly. I'm a John Chaney guy. Love Temple basketball. They ran the four corners on them, and they slowed the game down. I'm looking at their game stats, and they had 39 carries for 118 yards. That's 2.8 yards a carry, right? And then passing wise, they were 14 for 21, 129 yards, and two touchdowns. But they picked up plays that were timely. They converted on third down. They utilized Grantham's blitzing techniques. They must have watched a lot of film. And the scary thing is, maybe Grantham's blitzing is becoming predictable at this point. A lot of times they were throwing the ball right back into what I call the vapors of the blitz. That's when you bring the guys from the secondary up, and the quarterback's able to recognize that. Once they vacate an area, you throw the ball in there, and then you got a guy running upfield, and that's what happened on that tunnel screen, the ramming.
They definitely scouted out what down and distance blitzes he uses. That was obvious from the jump off, and he didn't make the right adjustments to it. But what I would like to say about the secondary is I think a lot of what they were doing, when you saw him running multiple times in a row, running that same tunnel screen and those different screens that they were doing on the outside. I don't know about you, Dave. What did you see? But I kept thinking, don't bite on it, because they're running this because they want our corners and our secondary to come up and play too tight, and then they're going to throw us up. They're going to beat us deep, and that was what I thought they were setting up. And hats off to the secondary, man. They didn't take the bait. Chucky still misses open field tackles, though. And
well, they did take the bait. You sit there and you say, man, how many times are they going to throw that boring screenplay out there? And it was all about – it was like baseball. You know, you get like timely hitting, where a team may get five men on base but score four runs. That's because they scored their runs. They made timely hits when runners were in scoring position. And on that second touchdown of the game, you saw KD Cannon come up and bite, and you saw that slot guy just leak out on the fade route, and Jones just turned, threw it upfield, perfect pass, touchdown. And I wanted to ask Bobby Petrino that in the post-game presser, but it was my first time there, and I know Bobby can be kind of vicious to people when he doesn't like the question that's asked, so I kind of held back. But I wanted to say, you know, what did you say to KD Cannon when he came off the field? I know you told them, stay over the top, keep them in front of you, especially with the athletes Louisville has. You want to keep the guy in front of you, come up, make the play, but if you bite and you come up, you're dead. And he was dead. Touchdown. It was 17-14, and people were nervous at that point in the game.
Right. And, you know, you probably would have been safer to ask that question since we won versus asking that question in a loss. But, you know, overall, there was a lot of bend, don't break. Because, I mean, 14 points, giving that up, not having time of possession, certainly, then, you know, that's where the defense
Lamar never got in a rhythm in the passing game because of that. Because, I mean – he was frustrated. You know, you could see that. You could read his body language on television. I know you all were at the game, but you know, you could see it in his eyes. He was really frustrated at the inability to get in the rhythm, and that's why you saw him making a lot of overthrows. I don't know what football game some of our fans on Twitter saw, but you know, they're out here blaming the receivers for running poor routes, and that has nothing to do when he overthrows you 10 yards.
Yeah, he was chucking a few in the dirt, couple too high, too fast.
Yeah, he was off a little bit, and I think anybody that's paid real close attention to Lamar this year has noticed that his short and intermediate passing game needs a little work. You know, he's got a cannon, and he lasers it in there, and like any coach will tell you, if that ball hits your hands, it's then on the receiver.
Right.
If that ball hits the receiver's hands, it's on him to catch it. But when, man, I know he's jacking him in there. It's like a laser, and they're having a hard time handling him.
Yeah.
Not to mention a couple times he's thrown at the ankles. He's thrown behind his receiver. He needs to work on that short and intermediate passing game.
Well, that's what's happening. I mean, we knew that coming into this year. We just happened to have a hot start. But, you know, we've seen some of that. And, of course, his best pass was that scrambling around 40-yard like a dart. You know, that's the pass we're not worried about.
Well, a thing that I noticed, okay, so Petrino, he's very he's very scripted in what he does, and he's a very layered play caller, meaning that everything he does is setting up the next play. He's a chess player. He's thinking three moves ahead, all right? And Louisville's offense, the reason why it's so explosive is because you have to account for the read option, all right? And Radcliffe has been a big key to success this year so far, all right, because people are keying on Lamar. And you say, man, this Radcliffe guy is gashing us. And then you switch and you say, all right, well, I'm going to key on Radcliffe and make Lamar beat us. And then so you're focusing so much on that they do a run-pass option. And now you got Smith, you got Samuels, you got Quick, you got all these guys running free downfield. And the linebackers are all frozen. The safety's frozen. And you know Petrino loves to hit those crossing routes. But once the read option starts failing, everything kind of falls apart. And then the rhythm comes loose. All right, so we talk about him not firing the ball, or he's firing the ball too hard to receivers, right? But and sometimes he's short hopping players. So we saw an overthrow on that great play action fast. I think it was Towbridge, mm-hmm. who was all alone, and he chucked it over his head, right? That would have been a big chunk play. And this offense is predicated on big chunk plays. When you take those big chunk plays out, you see them punting. And the fans do not like to see their team punting, but they don't realize that all of those big chunk plays are set up on the 6-yard run by Radcliffe. Now you got second and four. And then second and four, the whole playbook is available to you. Exactly. But when it gets shut down and it's second and 10, then you got to try to get to third and four. And if that doesn't work, then you see a lot of pressing, and you see a lot of people off rhythm. Another thing that people don't understand is, if Lamar is short hopping Jalen Trayvon Samuels on that third down where they ended up kicking the field goal, right? That wasn't on Lamar. That was on Jeremy Smith, who did a horrible job picking up the linebacker coming up through the A gap on that blitz. So Lamar's got a man in his face. Now Lamar has a decision to make. Do I throw the ball down the gun barrel? Do I follow through? Do I take the big impact from this linebacker coming? Or do I trust my athletic ability, throw it off my back foot? I got a big arm. Okay, I don't care how strong your arm is. If your footwork isn't right, you're probably going to throw it short, and that's what happened. But if Jeremy Smith block picks up that block, then it's 14-7. Now Duke doesn't get to do their boring four corners offense anymore. They got to press a little bit because they can't get behind. See?
Yeah.
Well, and you talked about the big run, the big throw play, the 40-yard, mm-hmm. Where he was scrambling out, and then he just let it rip. That's him. He wasn't overthinking anything. That was natural. That was comfortable for him. Mm-hmm. But when he was trying to stand in the pocket and make throws, he was getting frustrated at the inability to just, get the job done. And I attribute that to being a sophomore.
Yeah.
That's my big takeaway from it is that, this is where you can pump the brakes a little bit on, is he Superman? And he's not quite there yet. I mean, he's got all the tools to be there, but there's a lot of development for Lamar to do, which is actually a really good thing. To say, look how good he is now. Now wait until he has full control and a full understanding and a grasp of playing from the pocket. Because, when he gets comfortable, we've seen what he does.
Right.
Well, and Lamar instinctually is a playmaker, and he knows he's a playmaker. So when things begin to break down, he doesn't feel comfortable. He likes to keep the ball himself because he knows what he's capable of. And heretofore, that's worked out for him. But if you come in with a defense that's done their homework, done a lot of the film, and they know what his capabilities are and know how to contain him, you can force him into making the wrong reads. you can make it especially difficult for that short intermediate pass, especially Duke. Duke's got a good secondary. Yeah. We knew they had a good secondary.
I want to dovetail off what Drew said there as far as the reads that Lamar's making, not so much in the passing game but in the running game. What Duke's defense was doing, when you're running a read option, Lamar has one guy that he's keying on. It depends on if it's a midline read, meaning you're reading the tackle in the middle of the line, okay? And you're going to let a guy come free. Once he comes upfield, he knows, okay, if he comes at the running back, if he goes down the line, then he pulls it out of the running back's stomach and he goes right through the area where the defensive tackle vacated, okay? Then defenders have to deal with him on a second level in his athleticism, which is a problem, right? But what they would do is they'd come in and they would just plug the gap, meaning they wouldn't come upfield. So Lamar doesn't know what's going on. So with a guy like Lamar, he's going to try to make a play because he doesn't see anyone coming at him. And he's like, oh, you're going to test me like that. They did the same thing on the edge a lot of times. Let's say that the play is going to the right, okay? So the running back's going to get the ball to the right. Well, what Lamar's going to do is read the defensive end on the opposite side the play's designed to go to. If that defensive end comes upfield and goes after the running back, he pulls it and he goes around him. But what their guys were doing was they were just coming up in the gap and sitting there.
Right, they spied him the whole time, and that's how you beat the read option. You take your two ends or your two outside linebackers, and you tell them, you just stand here. You don't move forward.
And you can do that when you have a good secondary.
Exactly.
If you don't have a good secondary, that game plan is going to torch you.
Right. You've got to have corners that you can put on an island, and you got to have safeties that are extremely well disciplined. But if you spy the ends and you don't over pursue. I mean that's why that play works in college and not so much in the pros, because you've got discipline, and everybody in the pros is, you know, runs fast, hits hard. Mm-hmm. And you know, look at RG3. You can't take the hits like you can in college.
No, you sure
so
can.
That's a big reason why it works in college and in high school, because you're preying upon undisciplined players, and you know, I mean, it takes a special kind of jerk to complain about a 20-year-old making a mental mistake.
You don't get that at the next level in the league. You're not going to be a quarterback. I don't care how fast he is or how elusive, they are not durable enough to do what he's doing. Unless you're Cam Newton,
right.
You're 260 pounds and what was he, 6'5", 6'6". Yeah. I mean,
he's still going through the concussion protocol.
Right.
But to go on what Joe said, I don't necessarily think that it was Lamar making the right read. I just think it was a really good game plan cooked up by Duke's defensive line coach to have those guys play that way. There wasn't a read there, because you're supposed to read that guy coming up being aggressive. If he's sitting at home and I'm Lamar Jackson, I'm thinking, oh, you don't want to come up? Cool, I'm just going to run around you. And you got to have good guys in the secondary, but you also have to have linebackers. And Ben Humphries is a great linebacker. He's one of the best in the ACC, and he's disciplined. He stayed home. He stayed to the outside. He kept his outside shoulder free. You want to always force Lamar Jackson back inside to the defense. You want to corral him. If he gets around you, and he still does.
Yeah.
He still did. And he still had that Superman factor. I mean, that throw to Seth Dawkins down the field, it was amazing. He climbed the pocket. He put his head down for 1 second, popped it back up, and just flung that ball about 48 yards in the air.
Hey, I got to ask my man from Philadelphia. Did you leap out of your seat when he did the Randall Cunningham play action?
Yeah.
If that had gone for six, man, I was serious. Like, that was so smooth because – you know, I was watching the game with my wife, and she can tell you, I screamed, holy shit, that's the Randall.
Yeah,
like, that is the cleanest play. That is so smooth. It's
he poetry. Does that a lot, too.
Yeah.
He does it a lot.
I saw him do it a lot in practice, but he hasn't done it in a game like that yet, has he?
Yeah, he has.
Has he?
Yeah, I put it in one of my breakdowns.
Well,
yeah.
I haven't really noticed
it. Oh, yeah.
I mean, my first comment was LaFleur has always right nailed that back. One. So.
I mean, it's just it's like Ken Griffey Jr. swing, Ollie's jab, and Ray Allen's jump shot. It's just pure.
Yeah. Well, anything else as far as from an X and O perspective? Because I want to talk about, I know Joe Runaround had pretty funny some tailgating stuff. I know that Drew was around the game in the blackout and stuff like that. And there's some other things I want to bring up from a national perspective.
Well, I'm going to have my little, you know, iPhone on the TV breakdown. I've already done it. It's already up on my Twitter account, but I'll put it into a post for the Crunch Zone.
Great.
Probably try to do that tomorrow. So check. Be on the lookout for that, guys.
Okay.
And girls.
Well, as from the world of the interwebs, following the game, watching the game, not being able to be at the game, it's just amazing like how upset and disappointed everyone was with the team. And most of the people that are really upset with the team don't. You know, and myself included, don't understand football. Like, really don't understand football. Like, I know we're playing a zone, playing a man-to-man. We know basic stuff, but
right.
You don't really know how to give credit to the other team for a good game plan. And that's why Lackford's been great to break some of this stuff down to kind of explain things to us, and we hope you appreciate that kind of stuff. But as people are watching this game and getting frustrated, I'm thinking, just win the damn game. Just win the damn game, because it doesn't matter. No one's going to remember your style points in week six against Duke 6 weeks from now. And if you know, if you're worried about them forgetting about the Florida State win, well, then you should be comforted by the fact that they will probably forget about just winning, barely winning the game against Duke. I think Duke definitely gets a lot of credit. They had held us to 60 plays or something, 9 total possessions. We almost had doubled that against Florida State. The opportunities weren't there to score. And where Joey Galloway from ESPN was giving compliments to Lamar was, because his cohort, whoever he was saying, well, what's up with Lamar? He had a bad game. And he said, well, first of all, he only had 9 possessions. I said, so he's like, my compliment to Lamar is that he didn't force things, because he's a young quarterback, and with only 9 possessions, he could have done a lot of damage to Louisville by trying to press, and he didn't. And he's like, the second thing is last week we're talking about how JT Barrett was amazing with his 130 yards rushing, and we're calling Lamar a bad game with 145 yards rushing. So, you know, he's fighting his own standard here, and we've kind of talked about that.
We've raised the bar to a level that it's just going to happen, you know, and if you write for a website, if you do a podcast, any of that, you're just going to get mentions that just bear with them, man. Just keep scrolling. Like, people's expectations change, and that's okay. We talked about that last week. You know, at the beginning of the year, we were saying if we lose 2 games, this is a great year. Now we're like, damn that. Let's run it out. Let's finish the year with 1 loss. Game by game, I knew the way that we started off. I think we even talked about it on here. You know, what's that point total that we think our fan base would just, even in a win, would be like, we had a terrible game. And, you know, it's right around that 35-point mark. Yeah. If we don't get 42 or better, they played like crap. And my rule is, if you tweet at me the day of the game, I will forgive you for being a drunken moron. If you tweet at me, you know, like, oh, we had a terrible game. If you complain about a win in my mentions after 24 hours to sober up,
yeah,
I'm not going to be nice to you, man, because you got to have perspective. And it's important to keep that.
I think one thing about the casual fan, too, first of all, a lot of fans saw Duke, and they know that Duke is not one of these perennial powerhouses in football. You know, they're a basketball school. They shouldn't be as good as they are, or seem like they were. Had a conversation a couple weeks ago with Keith, and he was telling me that the time of possession stat is the most worthless stat in football, and why is it tracked?
Who said that?
When it goes along with a good game plan, time of possession, as we saw Friday, that's a big deal.
Shout out to the Super Bowl 25 champion New York Giants, who kept the ball out of Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed, and Jim Kelly's hands and just fed Otis Anderson the whole time and won the Super Bowl.
Well, and the other thing to go along with that is
Keith is mad right now. Big mad or little mad, Keith? Little mad. He's little mad.
He's not quite red yet.
To go along with that, clothed. We're just now in the part of the season where all of the stats that have been kept since week one are starting to make sense. You know, you play 2 games, you look at the stats, and you see the numbers that teams have been putting up. You can't put a whole lot of faith into them, because depending on the schedule and who they've played, you just don't have enough data points to build a good picture.
Small sample size, right?
And now you're starting to even out. You're halfway through the season. Those numbers are starting to make a little more sense. So if you start off by blowing a team out by 43 points, and then by week six you beat a very good and well-coached team in Duke by 10 points, you know, things, you start finding your own even level. And I think that the more that Florida State continues to win and have big games, sounds like they're kind of getting their composure back,
right,
that win is going to look better and better and better.
Right, and the other thing, Cutcliffe, obviously, you mentioned it. He's a great coach. So, I mean, he's going to be able to cause problems. He caused problems for Louisville. He didn't have enough talent to beat Louisville, but he had enough coaching wherewithal and some talent on his team to cause problems. Also in week six is whatever you were doing that was a surprise factor is now out. If the cat's out of the bag.
Absolutely.
They have 6 weeks worth of tape, and they said, okay, they didn't do this last year. They're doing this year. So here's what we're going to do to try to counter their current personnel, because let's face it, you do as much homework as you want on schemes, but the reality is you change based on your personnel, and last year's tape is a little different than this year's tape.
And I also think a lot of the disappointment can be attached to Vegas setting a just disgusting line. I mean, it was 35 points by the time we went in there, and they made a lot of money off suckers that were like, oh, yeah, they're going to go score 100 on them because Lamar, you know, he's going to have 1,000 yards of offense because it's Duke. But Cutcliffe's Duke program isn't the typical Duke program. You know, I mean, he's made them a respectable, decent member of the ACC.
Right.
Oh. Sure. Well, nationally, look what they did with was it Texas A&M? They played in the bowl game when Johnny Manziel was down there. I mean, they almost won that game.
It was a great game.
That was a fantastic game.
Beat IU last year in a controversy where the field goal that Indiana kicked to tie it was higher than the goal post, so they couldn't review it.
Right.
They called it a miss. IU saw it as a make, and they said, sorry, we can't look at it.
I forgot about that, but
what a stupid rule.
That's how Duke won that the bowl last year. But this is actually Cutcliffe's worst year.
Yeah.
In the last 4 or 5 years or so in the ACC, I mean, he's had a lot of bowl-eligible teams. They just haven't really gotten over the hump of winning until last year.
Well, a lot of that has to do with their quarterback going down. Sirk is a big – I mean, he's the quarterback, and he's a dual-threat guy. He's a big dude. Reminds me of Taysom Hill from BYU. You know, and when your quarterback goes down, your team's going to suffer. But they hang in there. They play tough. And like you said, man, the cat's out the bag. All these teams are going to be looking at Louisville as their Super Bowl now. The same way Louisville was all hyped up to play Florida State. Florida State had all that hype. Now Louisville got the hype. So, you know, you become the hunted. You're no longer the hunter, you know. So, like Jimbo Fisher said, you know, you want to be the big dog. Every time you walk around the block, they're going to throw their best dog out there every single week. So, if NC State comes in next weekend and you get another dog fight, then expect that, you know. And you want your guys to be able to stand up to that, to fight back, never quit, and win the game, you know. And that's what Louisville did against Duke, and they got to keep doing that. Just win.
Just win. Because if you know, if you're upset with the win, I can't imagine how upset you'll be when we lose.
If you're upset with any win, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, like, take some time and enjoy this. This is fun. Even if it's not a blowout game and it's not what you thought it was, it's not the Syracuse game. Lamar's probably not going to hurdle anybody else this year. All right, Chelsea, just get that out your head.
He might.
I'm just saying, odds are it's probably like – just chill.
He did some Superman shit.
Winning is fine, but I think some of the expectations are that Louisville is going to win with style points because they've got their eyes set on the 4-team playoff. But, I mean, let's be honest. That's the goal, right? Yep. And everybody thinks that you got to have these style points. You got to come out here and you just got to absolutely smack down every team you play, and you got to win by the most amount of points that you can. But that's really not true. As long as you keep winning, things have a way of working themselves out. If you look at who the four teams that have been in the playoffs the last 2 years, look at where they were ranked at through week 6 of that season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the pundits are still saying that they think we get in at 4. So, I mean, when you got ESPN guys all still loving us, the sky's not falling, Chicken Little.
You got a half a season left to play. Some of those teams that are ahead of us are going to cannibalize themselves. And
the other thing, too, is just like you pointed out, though, and I'm saying, like, man, people enjoy this because we're halfway done.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we only got 7 more, hopefully 8 more.
And while we feel like it's within grasp, let's be honest, this is like the closest we've been since 2006, and before that it was never. Mm-hmm. So if you can't enjoy your season that one rare time that you get this close to it, then you're just never going to enjoy football. You know, win or not, just enjoy the process.
And another thing is everybody's talking about the AP polls. The AP polls are going to be irrelevant next week when the college football committee starts voting on who gets in, who doesn't, you know. And you could be all the way up until the last week of the season and be ranked number 4 and get leapfrogged like TCU did by Ohio State, you know. And also the whole ranking thing, it's the rigged media, you know. I'm going to go to Trump-level extinction on everybody and tell you right now it's the rigged media. They don't give a shit. There's nothing else on Tuesday to watch.
Right.
So they put the college football thing on there, and everybody tunes in, and everybody logs on to Facebook and Twitter and freaks out, you know. But it don't mean anything. It's just ratings on Tuesday night.
Yeah. Michigan just went up in a bye week. Congrats, Michigan, for playing really hard against nobody. But let's actually jump to some of the tailgating, some of that. You know, we'll spend a few more minutes on this game before we get to NC State. But I know, Joe, you were running around logging your steps.
Yeah, according to the Fitbit, it was 7.5 miles. We got down there, I think, around 2 o'clock. Had a buddy come in from Chicago. It's a funny story. He became interested in U of L because he was like, man, y'all's fan base is highly entertaining. And now that this Lamar Jackson kid, you know, is doing his thing, a Cubs fan chose to fly down for this weekend to catch the Duke game on a Friday as opposed to being at Wrigley.
Wow.
So, I mean, that should tell you how excited this guy was to get down here. And we made a day of it. Picked him up at the airport, you know, took him over to Wagner so he could get the biscuits and gravy. Showed him around campus, showed him around downtown a little bit. And then when we got to tailgating, I was like, look, we're not going to stand in any one position too long because there's a lot of stuff going on. So we started off with our friends Red Rage over in the old Cardinal lot. Hung out over there for a while. Then decided, okay, around 3, I think it was when we decided we were going to head over to the Caboose. Went over there. That's where we met up with Mark and Dave for a little bit. Met Kelly Dickey, hung out with him the whole day.
Yeah, did meet him too. Yeah.
Kelly is a really cool dude, man. I mean, he's. I always kind of wondered with a guy who's got stats like he does, is this guy socially awkward as shit? And he's not.
Yeah.
Really funny thing. He's like, hey, you're friends with Mike and John. Let's head over to Lynn Station real quick because I'd like to say hello. We'll go flip them off, you know, because they record in front of that glass window. So we're heading over there and we're talking, you know, and I'm doing my thing. I got to know everything about somebody when I meet them.
Yeah.
I'm like, so are you a U of L grad? Did you just grow up here in the city? What, you know, what's your connection with U of L? And he says, nah, I just went to this East Coast school that doesn't really have sports, and you know, they're not eligible for anything. So having U of L to cheer for when I was in school was a great thing. I'm like, oh, okay, what school did you go to? He's like, Harvard. I'm like, all right, man. I didn't know I was hanging out with a Harvard man, but this guy's all right with me because he doesn't advertise that. So sorry if you didn't want that out there, Kelly. But that was hilarious, man. That exchange really was funny because he just said it like, you know, water's
East Coast
wet.
Team.
Well, water's wet. You know, grass is green.
Yeah.
So we get over to John and Mike, and you know, we're out there giving them the double finger salute, and John runs down. He's like, "Hey, come on up, talk for a while with us." So I hopped on there. We talked about the pregame, the blackout, the fact I was wearing red, good stuff.
Did you really?
Yeah, I didn't go to the game. I didn't go to the game.
Oh, you were
I didn't go to the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know there was a dress code to just drink beer in a parking lot.
Yeah, you know. But you're easily picked on at that point.
Oh, wasn't even thinking about it.
If I had black body paint on.
Yeah, then
I wasn't going to wear that damn shirt anyway.
I even tweeted that. I said, don't be the guy wearing red at the blackout. HD TV is going to single you out like you won't believe
well,
it.
No one's ever.
I know you weren't in the game.
No one's ever accused me of being a smart man. So, you know. So we hang out with them for a while. And then I'm like, shit, we got to get my man over to see the card march.
Yep.
So we haul ass over there. We get to see the very tail end of it, but he still got to experience that. That's when we went over to the caboose the second time, and that was when you could tell it was tailgating fever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was every local sports, you know, personality, media type. I'm standing there hanging out, and Adam Frohman's there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, shit, Frohman and I got the same pair of Nikes on.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So I'm talking to him. Apparently, he and my wife had class together at U of L, and they were friends. They had the same major. And she's talking to him about, you know, like, how have you been? She's like, yeah, my husband's on Twitter. You know, he's at That Boy's Good. And some random dude walking by goes, oh, shit, man, he's hilarious. Yeah. And then just goes to, like, pounding bourbon.
We're like,
yeah.
So, we were out there. Dave was on his best behavior because he had to sit in the media box, so he couldn't drink any bourbon with me.
Can't
cheer.
He tried. He was the devil on my shoulder.
I had some Eagle Rare in a flask for you.
Joe had a moment of personal growth at the tailgate. You want to tell that story?
Oh yeah, I got to meet somebody that I'd been petty with on Twitter and tell him. I'm not gonna call him out, and like, because he don't, you know, like, there's no point in bringing this up. Anybody that knows what's going on here. But there was a local media guy that I haven't been exactly fair to, and I got to meet him and find out he is in fact not a douchebag.
Yeah,
he's a really nice guy. Dude was cool as shit. I mean, like, he's like, hey, I even heard you on the way down here. You sounded amazing. Good job. Great work. I just really appreciate you telling John, like, hey, stop calling me TBG. You can call me Joe. You know, I mentioned that on air.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, you can call me Joe. Like, cat's out of the bag. The joke's dead. We beat it with a horse. Moving on.
Yeah.
But met him. Great guy. Really glad to bury that hatchet. Moving forward. Trying to think of who else was over there, man.
Is that why you got the black eye?
Yeah.
We came to an understanding.
Yeah, we reached an agreement, and man, he's got a punch on him. He's a puncher. I could tell he still does upper body.
If we know what you're talking about, and he comes from the lower realms like I do with the punches, we start low to the ground because we don't have a choice.
Way down south. Mark Ennis, is Ennis or Enos?
Ennis.
Yeah, Mark Ennis, big Enos time.
Ennis.
Yeah, he big time me. I was standing on the stairs coming up the caboose to the ESPN booth, and he was shaking hands with everybody, and I was like, Mark, nice to meet you, man. And he just walked by me like I didn't even.
Push you right off the caboose.
You missed it, man. But okay, the funniest thing that Kelly Dickey did is he actually the shit out of Adam Frohman.
Yeah.
Because you know, when I'm leaving, I'm like, all right, Adam, it was great meeting you. You know, good luck. He's doing scouting now for U of L. I had no idea he was on staff. Yeah. I was like, great, you know, good meeting you. Appreciate everything. We told some Cragthorpe jokes. And he's like, yeah, you know, I mean, this last couple runs of quarterbacks we've had, it's nice to be part of that fraternity, and at least I can say I own one stat in U of L history.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there with Kelly, and we're walking down the caboose, and I'm like, the stairs. I go, yeah, what stat do you own? And he said, I got the stat for most consecutive completions by a UofL quarterback in a game.
Yeah.
Kelly goes, like, I almost walked into him because he was walking in front of me. He immediately stops and turns around and goes, well, actually, Adam, and let me pull it up for you on my phone here. You have the third highest total. And, I mean, it's like you could tell he wasn't trying to be rude or anything.
I'm really excited. I know.
It's how his brain works. It's like
that's the wrong fact.
Dude, here's the right fact. It's like I said to John and Mike when I was on with them. This dude is seriously like Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind, just chiseling out UofL stats on a window pane.
Yeah.
And when he did that, man, like, it's a rare moment when you see a former D1 athlete, a man who's still in great shape, you know, and looks like he could play quarterback for a team. And he just went from, like, you know, like shoulders high and everything to, like, all the air was taken out of him. And then he had to go do a pregame show. And I just want to know what, like, immediately he had to turn around and hop on a mic. And I wonder if he wasn't just like,
oh, sorry, Adam.
Why bother?
We still, I gave Adam props. So the first time he was on the show with Diener one morning, the only show we've done together, he was stepping in. And, you know, I thanked him. You know, I said, don't think Louisville fans don't understand that first year of success when you all you changed a real dilapidated culture to a bowl winning culture, not just going to a bowl, but that was a Southern Miss, I think, that they won. That is what gave the green light to other recruits to say, oh, Charlie knows what he's doing. You know, because you get a lot of credibility with that turnaround, and they don't get enough credit out loud from people because they just remember the flashy stuff and the sugar bowls and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, with as bad as it was in football, and if they turn around and gone 5-6 or, you know, 5-7, they don't get Teddy or any of these guys.
Right.
You know, they're like, well, we'll wait and see. You just basically went from a losing season to a losing season. So that's not very exciting. But when you see kind of that step forward that they made, it just gave everyone the green light to say, okay, I can trust Coach Strong. And it made a big difference in the program, just Muschamp.
And I think this season has turned another page, too. Yeah. I think that was the beginning chapter, but now there's a new chapter with, you know, the first Heisman. I mean,
right.
Let's be honest, nobody's close to Lamar
in the Heisman race. One of my favorite things to do, because I was lucky enough when I was in college that I knew not a lot, but a couple of the guys on the football team, so they got me in with other guys on the football team. And talking to them, we might have some interviews lined up down the road for the listeners.
We'll get that going. TBG's waiting on me to get him what he needs.
Hey, man, it's all good. I don't need more stuff that I have to be responsible for anytime soon. But one of the things that I think you all will enjoy is hearing what it's like from all the guys that played in Conference USA, the Big East, watch the Big East crumble, the Craig Thorpe era, talking to all the guys that have been around all that, hearing them talk about Lamar and the team now and Bobby, too, you know, second go around. And that's something really special, and I think fans will enjoy it because they talk about it. You know, we're all passionate from a fan side, but this is something they put time, work, effort, blood into, and they're so incredibly proud of the university right now. Right. It's a different level of pride than even what we experience.
Yeah, and I remember a tweet from Calvin Pryor just after the Florida State game, just like, hey, we did some good things, but this is a whole nother level. I mean, that was his tweet.
Yeah.
So it would be great to hear from players. So you're waiting on me. So I'm sorry, everybody. We'll get that going soon.
We'll get it going.
All right, well, we wrap up this Duke segment. We took him down. We won. That's all you can really ask for out of your team. I mean, you want to play perfect all the time, but just as we talked about before, these aren't professional athletes. Don't tweet at them when they have a bad game, and don't expect them to play their best game every week out. They're amateur football players.
And also recognize that the other team played their ass off as well. It's not like it's not like Louisville's just going to show up and everybody else is going to lay down and say, okay, we want a good view for the show.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, teams are going to come at us. It is what it is.
Yep. It's fun to be the hunted.
I was not here last week, so I didn't make a prediction. However, I'm certain that had I made a prediction, it would have been wrong.
Yeah.
with the way the game played out.
Yeah.
But my streak is still intact. Score 35 points or you don't beat Louisville.
Right, that's right. Yeah, see, my prediction on Twitter was much higher, but had I been on the show, I would have said Louisville 24, Duke 14. But I guess we'll never be able to prove that. All right, well, that'll wrap up Game of the Week. We're going to go to talk about NC State next. Sorry, not Game of the Week. Game recap. Now let's switch to Game of the Week.
Game of the Week.
NC State's coming to town, and boy, I tell you what, we're all glued to our televisions. NC State Clemson gave us I didn't know what to cheer for, to be honest, because I was like, well, you know, two losses is good. We need a zero or a two. A one doesn't really help us. I didn't know what to think.
Yeah, you got. I was like, why are you cheering for NC State? First of all, you want Clemson to go undefeated. That's the team that beat you. Yeah. NC State is not going to run the table after they beat Clemson if they get lucky. They're not that good. So you don't root for. So if, who's Clemson play next week? I forget. They got a bye? They got a bye.
I'm not sure who they're playing.
You want Clemson to beat Florida State. All right. That's obvious.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. You want Clemson to win out. You want Clemson to win the ACC. Because then you can say our only loss is to the ACC champ.
Who's and
then
in, you have and that happens trump to be card. The current national runner up.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's what you want. And then what are they going to do? Deny Louisville over. I mean, name Michigan's quarterback. Go ahead.
Billy Madison. And also.
There you go.
Also, Michigan has a new out-of-conference schedule. So there's all these jump ball scenarios. We want Clemson to be undefeated.
Exactly. So I don't. I was. Can someone explain their frame of mind? Well, is anyone here rooting for NC State?
I will say why.
No, I think that people were looking at it, and they knew that Clemson should have lost the Louisville game. And I think they were looking at it, and they're realizing, hey, you know what? Clemson should be 5-2. Clemson should not be 7-0. Those are two gimmies. Louisville won down there. There's some with the referees, the officiating, the home field advantage. I told some of that story about being down at Clemson and the man we ran into at Walmart.
Yeah,
and I heard his voice again the other night watching that NC State game.
Say it again for the people listening.
The guy said that you go down to Clemson and you play there at Death Valley, especially at night. You have to go down there and you have to whip their ass. You have to roll them all over the field, up and down, and make it can't even be a close game, because if you go down there and you let them hang around, you have a close game, you're going to win or you're going to lose, and it's going to be a heartbreak. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a heartbreak. And what happened to NC State?
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the post-game interviews with Dabo, some of the things that he said after they won that game, he made it seem like the reason why they won that game against NC State was something that they've been doing in the offseason or practicing.
Right.
It was all luck.
That also because God likes Clemson more.
Yeah, right. Well, he would leave you to believe that.
NC State, when they lined up to kick the field goal, my buddy that was in town was like, oh, my gosh, they're about to beat them. And I'm like, yeah, you don't watch a lot of ACC football. They're still NC State. They're going to shank this.
Yep.
And then, poof. And I was like, cool. Yeah, that's what NC State does.
They had five drives to take that lead, and I think they finished with negative 47 yards on those five drives.
If you had to ask me, like, what I know about NC State, I'm a terrible football insider on this, because I can tell you, Torrey Holt, they got obnoxious fans, and they got weird both sexes wolf mascots.
Well, the Cardinals used to have a female one. I guess they gave that up. But I will say something about NC State. Was last year, it was a pivotal part of our season. All right, that was when we were 1-3 with a win over Samford. And then we were going to NC State, who was 4-0. And we're like, okay, this is literally the breaking point of the season. Because if you go 1-4, your next game is at Florida State. And then are you going to go down 1-5? What the hell do you do then? No one even shows up to the games. Yeah. Yep. NC State, that game was pivotal last year. So that was kind of a big deal. Cards won a close one in 2013, seemed to turn the season around, played good for three of the four quarters against Florida State, but there was always that one quarter where Florida State went crazy on us, and that was a problem. But looking at NC State's team this year, it seemed rather pedestrian, but they have a great running back. Looks like Matt Days knows what he's doing. He's got almost 700 yards rushing.
Mm.
He's got four touchdowns. But total yards from scrimmage, it's like 247. Plays from scrimmage this year are the run, 187 of the pass. So they would prefer to be running and then use the pass when they can, but I heard their wide receivers are so-so on catching the catchable ball.
They've got a great offensive line.
They do.
They've got one guard in particular that, man, he's outstanding.
Their quarterback's very efficient this year so far. He's completing 65% of his passes. He's got, 1,300 yards, 9 touchdowns, 2 picks. He protects the ball well. I'm interested to see, because people think that tempo means up-tempo. When they say, oh, that's a tempo offense, tempo goes two ways. It's a sliding scale, all right? You can have down-tempo, up-tempo. And Duke was usually an up-tempo team, but they turned down the tempo. It's just they don't huddle. They get to the line, they get set, they read your defense. They may go up there and do what I call a freeze, which is they'll go up there, they'll bark out a few signals, do a fake snap count, see if you jump, and see what your defense does, see if they come forward. Then they'll stop back. You'll see everybody turn, look at the coaching staff. And I'd be surprised to see if Dorian slows down his tempo this week and does a little bit of what Duke did, because Finley's way more efficient of a passer than Jones. I think that North Carolina has a better offensive line, as Drew said, and they have a better running back. And they also have a good H-back as well. Mm-hmm. So they're a lot more athletes at Dorian's disposal than what Cutcliffe had at his. So does he has the blueprint been laid? You know, mm-hmm. you know, check in on our heroes next week and we'll see what happens.
Right. Well, at the same time, so now Petrino has seen that as well. Now he's like, okay, I've got to figure this out because people are going to start doing this against us. So the chess match continues as it will all season long.
And that's also what happens when your defense isn't making big plays and getting a lot of turnovers like our defense has, you know, been known to do. Duke, again, not to go back to Duke, but they played a perfect game plan against our team. And, yeah, if you're intelligent, people are going to mirror it. I thought it was kind of interesting, though, today when I listened to Bobby's press conference that when they said, do you expect North Carolina to try or NC State to do the same thing that Duke did? I mean, he threw a real shot at Cutcliffe and said, no, I think they're actually – they believe in what they do. They're confident.
He said that?
Yeah, he said they're confident. Yeah. They're confident in their system. Yeah. And
Bobby, the king of shade.
Bobby Petrino had some fun at his press conference.
Oh, yeah, today he had some
laughs. Bobby Shade Tree Petrino.
Hey, can someone let us know who was that with the signature Bobby Petrino laugh track going on? At every one of his jokes was just, it sounded like Goofy in a Disney cartoon going off a cliff.
Had to be like his dad or something like that.
I don't know who
someone,
it was.
Someone laughs that hard at the jokes. It's got to be family.
Someone come forward and claim your long neck beer at the next tailgate.
Back on NC State, though, their defense looked great against Clemson. They did a really good job of shutting down that Clemson offense, and they played fast. They flew to the ball. They didn't give up a whole lot, and frankly, that's what kept them in the game.
Yeah, well, this and what NC State's done this year is completely different what they did last year. Last year, they went to 4-0 with like South Alabama being the best win. You know, this year they've already they lost to Wake, beat Notre Dame, beat someone else marginally good program. It's different. Last year was four dogs in a row, mm-hmm. So they're not afraid of football. They put a lot of guys in the pros. You know, they got a lot of talent on the team.
NC State is fifth in the country in rushing defense this year. They give up 3 yards of play. So I mean, it's going to be an interesting matchup. With you know, but the good thing is you have the X factor. You have Lamar Jackson, so you know you can see Lamar just drop a team's total defense or total rushing ranking way down the charts with, you know, 150 yards on 21 carries. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with that defense to scheme against Lamar. And I think that Duke, again, they showed the blueprint. You know, don't get your guys coming up field. Stay home, plug the gaps. Your linebackers got to fill, force the edge outside, and your safeties and your corners got to get off the blocks. And Louisville has good blocking wide receivers, so it's mm-hmm. it's going to be a good matchup. I think, you know, you may want to run a couple just straight-up run plays with Radcliffe. Yeah. Run Radcliffe. Run Smith. Don't even worry about the read option on it, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's important to note Louisville's offensive line looked great this past game. I know we didn't mention that, but I think they got flagged for one false start against Duke.
Hallelujah.
And no snapping fractions. They did a really good job keeping it clean. You know, obviously they didn't have the possessions for them to perform the way that they would go out and get more snaps and repetitions. But I look for that to continue. And I think if they continue like that against NC State, they'll be in a good place.
I don't know what the name of the account is. I can't remember. I retweeted it earlier. Someone was talking about it, but it basically gives offensive line ratings.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I think it was Keith Wynn. I think Keith Wynn mentioned that Louisville's offensive line is rated really well across the board in a lot of their statistics. And that's a long run from last year
it's taken a
young
little time.
Team
it's taken
to
a little time
get to where they were.
Chris Klonak's game, his scheme, the way he wants his offensive line, a lot of zone blocking, a lot of that kind of stuff. It's taken some time for that scheme to set in, for these guys to adjust to a new way of doing things. And Coach Klonakis, he's one of the best out there.
Drew and I are on record from day one saying that is a great hire, and we stuck with him when everybody was talking about how he's bum crap and he's this and he's that. Yeah. I watched him at Iowa State straight manhandle Mac Brown's Texas team, and that was the game that they lost on a bullshit call at the end of the game that if it's anybody but Iowa State playing Texas, that call doesn't get made. Game is over. I mean, they played bully ball, and I remember watching them at our old house thinking, Iowa State? Yeah. Who do they have coaching their O-line? And then when we hired this guy that can't take a photograph to save his soul, and I looked up where he was from, I mean, I got hyped. And everyone, for 2 years, people have come sideways at Drew and I about this. So I'm telling y'all right now, eat it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's gone from what we thought was a big, big problem last year to this year being not just playing well, but top a lot of the
and let's also
statistics.
Discuss how hard it is from an offensive line standpoint. I mean, and I'll let Dave touch on this because he'll get far more into it. I try not to bore my friends anymore with X's and O's talk because I'm that guy when you watch
a game with
me.
You're calling me boring, bro?
No, I'm saying it's your turn to do it.
I try not to lack for the party.
They're tired of me doing it. They'll listen to you.
All right, gotcha.
But it's really difficult for an O-line to not catch random holding penalties when you got a quarterback that's running literally, like, darting everywhere. That's a chaotic situation for an offensive line to be in.
Yeah.
So that's what's really impressed me, like, we're not getting holding calls that – you don't see Lamar have a back-breaking, you know, run where he jukes a couple of defenders out, makes a tremendous play, and then is coming back because there was holding 10 yards behind the play because the lineman had no clue where he was.
I think the Lamar factor is that the refs don't even want to watch the line anymore when Lamar starts running around. They're all watching him, you know. But I'll tell you what, they're going to have their hands full with North Carolina State's D-line. Check this out. Bradley Chubb, he's a junior. He's going to go pro. He's first, second-round draft pick. He's a beast. He's got 5 sacks this year, 8.5 tackles for a loss. They got Darian Roseborough. He's a sophomore. He's got 4 sacks. And they got Kentavious Street, who's got 3.5 sacks. They have 18 sacks this year so far. Huh. So, you know, they're going to get tested today. You know, everyone thought FSU's D-line was going to be the one that really would be the litmus test, you know. But they got shredded, much to my chagrin.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think NC State's going to be another big test. They got some big horses up there. So we'll see if they can push the pads around a little bit.
And as you're looking at his puzzle pieces fitting in, so you're saying that's going to probably cause us some problems with Lamar. So it's like, okay, can we return the favor? So sacks is their thing. Mm-hmm. Well, Louisville returns with interceptions, except for Finley, their quarterback, happens to be really efficient. So are we going to get this even trade-off when we hit the defensive field?
Well, here's the thing. These guys are aggressive. They get upfield and they make sacks. You don't necessarily want to try test Lamar like that. You know, you come at the king, you better not miss, right? So I don't know. I don't know if they want to do a contain kind of plug-the-gap thing or if they want to get upfield and go at Lamar. I personally think that I'd use the Duke formula, which is keep my guys in the gap and let my edge rushers come up and try to force him back to the middle.
So you're saying Bobby was challenging NC State, their manhood about their game, because he doesn't want them to see a Duke game plan.
No, he was challenging. I think he was challenging Duke, and at the same time, yeah, throwing a little subliminal in there, a little biggie kick in the door.
I mean, you're saying plug the gap. That's not what they do. So it's almost like
right, yeah,
Bobby's
yeah.
like suggestive selling.
Yeah,
I don't want to see anyone else plug the gap anymore. No, I'm pretty sure NC State is confident in what they do. I don't expect to see that again.
Right. You know what? And he may be sending that shout out to everybody else on the schedule, too. Like,
yeah.
You know, Duke played like some wussies. I know y'all tougher than that, right?
No, he straight up said they didn't really play to try. He didn't say this specifically, but it was basically they weren't trying to win the game. They were just trying to keep from getting boat raced.
Mm-hmm.
Which
it looked like it, though.
I mean, that's a shot.
Dave's here to tell us what they're actually doing. But as you're watching, I was like, they're not even trying to score in points here. They're literally just trying to keep the ball forever.
They were. It was. Yeah. It's like it was a Mayweather fight. You know, they were just jabbing, playing defense, keeping the guy at arm's length. The whole and you know, I tell you what, if that knucklehead don't roll into the kicker in O'Hara's plant foot, they got a shot at it. They're running their 2-minute offense, and who knows what goes down in that game? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you know anything about Eastern Carolina?
Eastern Carolina? No,
like what they
really
do, that's too bad. Because NC State, the big – I read up on this a little bit. So that's the loss that they have. And I think they might –
I know they're
decent
this year.
The kicker might have had another miss in there. But the big concern after that game in the paper was, oh, boy, defense couldn't handle ECU. So what the hell is going to happen when we play all these ranked teams? That was the thing. But, you know, clearly they got some defensive stuff – set up. I just didn't know what East Carolina maybe did unique that caused so much problems, so much to the point where they said they basically had a bad defense.
I mean, when I watched the Clemson NC State game, all I was thinking is they really were, just like Dave talked about, you know, teams are going to be hyped up when we come to play them. Like, they were ready to play us because they look like they're playing kind of distracted football every other game I've watched with them. And maybe I'm just better, but I wasn't really that impressed with NC State. I was just very unimpressed with what Clemson did. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I know how good they can play when they want to. Why is this team still in it?
Yeah.
I don't think NC State does anything that is extremely just outstanding. But they do a lot of things well.
Right.
And they've got some good athletes, and they've got some good players in key positions.
Especially the trenches. They got trench monsters on the O-line and the D-line.
I'll be curious to see if they have an emotional type of letdown after walking out of Death Valley.
Feeling like you should have won that game.
Feeling like you left one on the field against the number three team in the nation. So
and then you're not
I'm
at home again.
To see if that
so
has any effect.
The rallying troops behind you because
what a 1-2 punch on that schedule, man. You know, Dorian's always bitching about the schedule, but I mean, you can't fault them on this one. I mean, you got to go down to Death Valley, then you got to come up here to Louisville. Yeah. That's rough.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll catch them in that emotional low.
Yeah,
maybe
it'll
we'll
be
say
interesting
mean things
to
them from the field.
Or they may be pissed off.
That would be the right response.
Not to keep bringing up Florida State, but how long did Florida State deal with the repercussions of getting their ass whipped by Louisville? I mean, they had that Showtime special so everybody could see it nationally, but if you're not around that program and have backside access, you don't see it. But that stuff is real.
And at the same time, Florida State played what? 3 games in 12 days. You know what I mean? They had a tough game against Ole Miss, then they had to turn around, and that was a Monday night game. Mm-hmm. Then they had to turn around on Saturday, then they had to come out here again. So, you know, that shit wears you down. It's cumulative. Football is like a fight, you know, and if you come out, take a bunch of punches in the first couple of rounds, you know, that damage just keeps adding up, and you're behind. And
body
and
blows.
You're tired, you're worn down, you take shots, and I don't know how healthy NC State is right now. I don't know of any key injuries to them at this point, but I think Louisville's pretty healthy, no?
Yeah. I mean, I think getting Shaq back is going to be a big thing. I think we're seeing that he's missed. Other than that,
Shaq story. Actually,
there's some depth that you'd like to shore up, but there's nobody that I really look at and go, man, we need that guy to rush back.
And Shaq was after the game. Mark and I, we walked on the field and we were leaving, and so we were going. The end zone where Papa John does his peel out, you know, and Shaq was in the end zone. There was a bunch of little kids out there, and so he grabs their ball, and he's like squaring up on them. He's like, all right, everybody come tackle me, you know, and he's juking all the little kids, and they're running around. So Shaq looks good. He's healthy.
Yeah.
You know, the little kids can't stop him. So
he's good enough to juke kids.
He's good enough to juke 5-year-olds.
5-year-olds.
he was out there sunning them. He's sunning them so bad he got grandsons right now.
All right, so we're expecting a tough battle with NC State. You know, they didn't go down to Clemson and do that just to come up here and give us weak sauce.
I don't expect a tough battle.
All right, let's do predictions. We'll start with Drew.
I'm going to say 38-10.
Okay.
Ooh, that's the most toned-down prediction we've had on this show.
Yeah, I'm going to say 38-10.
Okay, I like that.
All right, and what's the reasoning behind it? What makes you feel good about this game?
Well, one thing, like I said, the emotional letdown. Mm-hmm. I mean, those guys, they're going through some turmoil right now, and I think it's definitely going to be a factor. Also, I don't think that Bobby Petrino would come out and make the comments that he made at his press conference today and with the bravado that he has if he doesn't already have a plan and an idea of how he's going to attack what he's seen. Mm-hmm. He even said in that press conference that the one football game that he watched this weekend outside of, obviously, the Louisville game was that NC State-Clemson game.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's leaning on coach's cool confidence.
I'm going 42-17, and my thinking on that is a lot of what happened in that Clemson game is that Clemson put the ball on the ground a lot, like a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and hats off to NC State because they did what you're supposed to do. I just don't think we're going to make the mistakes that Clemson did to keep them in the game the way that, you know, the way that it shook down. If you didn't watch the game, it was a real ugly showing on Clemson's behalf.
Mm-hmm. Five turnovers again, yeah. I think. Which is what they had against Louisville. Unfortunately, Louisville just kind of didn't get to capitalize on all those.
All right, Bovada has Louisville as a 20-point favorite as I say this right now, all right? So I'm going to take the under on that, and I'm going to go – let's do easy math. I'm going to go I'm gonna price is right you, and I'm going to go 37 to 20.
$1.
37 to 20. Okay, and I'm going to say 35-14 because they'll have field goals they'll miss. So they probably could have extra points, and they're just not going to get
them. Yeah, I think any touchdown they score, they're just going to have to go for two. Because how could you put that guy back out on the field?
I've got an ex-boss who's an NC State fan. He's like, we lost East Carolina because of that dude, and three misses against Clemson. It's like, and I looked up his stats. I think I wrote them down. He actually wasn't doing that bad until Clemson. So he was so 2 of 2 inside the 30-yard line. Well, congratulations. But he was 3 of 7. Greater than 30 yards, 2 of 5 in the 30 to 39 range, which is not very good. So 2 of 5. But he had 3 misses against Clemson. So for the season, he actually wasn't all that bad. Things went south fast down in Death Valley.
Time to go scout on the soccer team.
Well, let's just hope for both teams that we don't get into a kicking contest this weekend.
Let's hope for my liver that doesn't happen.
Yeah, O'Hara wasn't exactly Vinatieri last week either.
He's benched now, too. So,
why they bench the other kicker?
Tell me a little bit of that, because Bobby was saying it's my fault. I don't know why he was saying it's his fault. And they were talking about the spot of the ball.
Yeah, well, he's talking about spotting the ball, and that's something I don't think a lot of, like you were talking about being an everyday fan.
Right.
You know, and he talked about there are certain places where you have to identify the spot of the ball and, like, how far you're going to go away from the snap. And that lines up everything. And he was talking about how, like, because they misspotted the one where the end crashed down just as you said. I mean, the defense for Duke read it perfect. They crashed down on it because we were out of position. So when you're out of position by a half yard even, I mean, you know, the old cliche, it's a game of inches, but it truly is. You're off by just a simple half yard, literally a foot and a half. And what that forces your kicker to do is say, oh, shit, I'm about to get wrecked or blocked, so they speed it up. And you know, I mean, it's a stage. It kicking is not as easy. I know people want to say, like, kicker had one job.
Yeah.
No, man, but everybody else got a job, too. And if the other people don't do their job, if you don't put the ball down properly, if you don't get the snap right, if you don't block correctly, if you don't call out the slide, if you misplace the ball, kicker sucks.
That alignment also affects the holder.
Oh, you damn straight it does.
Which hand he's holding with.
And that's – Bobby mentioned that as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of ins and outs to it. Go to a – if you want to know this stuff, go to a coach's clinic or just follow Dave on Twitter.
That's right.
Because there's more to it than just – it's not NCAA football on your Xbox where you just line up, hit X, snap the ball, and you kick it. Like,
well, I know these fans can't kick it because we see them at halftime trying to win these free cars, and they can't kick for anything. So, you know, these kickers we have are actually really good compared to our fans.
It sounds like Creaky's going to be the guy.
Man, hand to the sky, hand on my chest. I'm telling you right now, if I ever got that opportunity, I would decline and give it to the dude next to me and be like, just you drive me places if you win the car.
I don't want
to
embarrass myself.
I'm not going to go. Man, I'll mess around and tear an ACL.
All right, well, that's the game of the week. NC State's a noon game. It's on ABC. It's going to be our third ABC game this year. Kelly Dickey said the record is 4, so there is, you know, I don't know if – I think it's already pegged for ESPN for the Houston game, unless for some reason that changes up. So that's probably where we're going to be.
What channel's the national championship game on? Is that on ABC?
Yeah, that's right. We're going to have to see if we can tie that record once we get to the college football playoff, which we, of course, are going to do. All right, well, now that's done with that segment. We're going to roll to something we call Dudes Talk. I literally have nothing to say.
This is always such a curveball, man. Like, it was weird the weeks that you're not on, because you always come in here and just lob something out there that we're like,
well, I can lob stuff out.
We just all sit around and look and are like, and then it just takes off. And
third down music, go, boom.
No, I can't do it because I haven't done my research.
You haven't done your research?
I music's really important to me.
Look up
in and your iPod. So I'm not going to do something quick. Music is very emotional.
What if we talk about it and then you
I'm
can
talking
start,
about
you,
it.
You can get it go. I want Never Scared by Bone Crusher.
They played that.
Did they?
They did play Never Scared on third down.
If they played they used to play We Ready. And we went away from that because everybody does that. Archie Eversole and Bubba.
Yeah, see, that's Pastor Troy joined. That's not Archie. That's a knockoff. But anyway, whatever. I say come out with Annie Up, and I know you agree. I know Joe co-signs that. Or Shook Ones.
See, man, you're too East Coast on these picks, man. Like you're down in the South. Like something like Top Back would be dope by T.I.
Well, they can't put Spice One on there.
No, that's West Coast. Joe don't know about that. He's too young. You know what I mean?
Spice One? Man, I had the hip-hop coloring book with Spice One. All up, man.
What about Motown Philly Back Again? Play that one. Motown Philly Back Again.
I think that would do the opposite effect.
All right, so you only have, what, 10 seconds?
Give or take. I don't know. It depends.
You get 10 seconds.
They did a little different in Death Valley.
It's got to hit hard. It's got to sound ominous. And it's got
to about
Shook Ones.
What about the intro then to Victory? When Big's doing all his ad libs, the what?
Or Triumph. Triumph.
Yeah, Triumph. Triumph. Yeah.
Triumph the insult dog?
No,
man.
No,
Wu-Tang, man.
Or just bring the ruckus.
I don't think Triumph the insult
dog. I've seen a lot of people saying Purple Lamborghini.
They played that twice.
Yeah, Skrillex.
We've been playing that.
They were playing like esoteric trap music that I never heard of before. I didn't know what that was.
All right, so
man.
Here's the other thing is, like, you go to Twitter and you ask for the music, you're going to get the music from a very specific demographic, probably. Then you show up at the game, and it's all age ranges, and it doesn't make that. Sometimes the song just doesn't make any sense to the fan. And the thing is you have to get everybody on the same page,
the crowd
not just and 5% of them that are really hyped, and then 95% are like, what the hell is this?
I mean, go to the open practices and listen to the mixes that are played that the players get to pick. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I just can't imagine young black male athletes at the University of Louisville in 2016 even know what that Van Halen intro is.
Right.
Much less want to hear it. Like, can we burn that song down? Because it is the shittiest song that still gets rotated because it had an awesome video.
All right, well, here's the question then. Are we trying to get the fans loud?
Yes.
Or are we trying to get the players hyped? Because those might be
both.
That's the hard song to find.
I think one feeds off the other. That's the whole point.
So finding a song that
I think though, if we play
young
something,
kids in college.
I think if we play something where you can see the kids out there jumping, bouncing, getting rowdy, doing, you know, like chest bumping before the play, that the crowd's going to follow however suit the kids are playing.
Right. So you know? Crisscross will make you jump.
If we get like, if we could get Skrillex to do something with Neil Diamond.
Okay.
You get all demographics.
Look, here's the thing with it, though.
Or Will Ferrell doing Neil Diamond.
You gotta make it your own. Like, yep. Virginia Tech made, now me and Kelly were arguing, Kelly Dickey, you know, who did Enter Sandman first? Was it Louisville or was it Virginia Tech, right? But that don't matter because
it's Virginia Tech.
Tech now. And you got a 19-year-old kid. You got Isaiah Ford from Florida, who's a 20-year-old kid with dreads and gold fronts. He's coming out to Enter Sandman, and he's hyped. The crowd's hyped. Right. So you have to – it has to be adopted by the culture.
Well, here's the other thing is I don't think it's going to – in my opinion – Crumbs Revenge signs off on his comment he's about to say. As I'd like to tell my wife, I agree with my own opinions. In my opinion, I think that it needs to be a song that's kind of mixed. It's made. Like DJ K-Dawg can do this kind of stuff. He made I approach him before our first game of the ACC in Miami and say, we want to do – it's going to be a blackout. So I want Back is Black, but I want you to make a mix of it. I don't want just ACD. I want that to be the theme, but I don't – you know, just make it. So I think it's one of those things where you can do a song like – like I dig like a heavy bell, you know, like kind of like call to action there.
For Whom the Bell Tolls, Metallica.
But then it doesn't have to be Metallica though. You just take the bell and you work it into some other song, you know, that's going to bring some kind of bass or beat or something that's going to kind of get the whole crowd rumbling.
Make a Third Down hype video, Mike. that's your new job.
So everyone, look up at the screen now.
Revenge.
Here's the deal. In my videos, I will make my own version of a song. Like, I don't have mixing or anything that going on, but I'm like, I wish the song had this noise in it, so I lay that noise into it. Or I'm like, I love the song except for this 10 seconds. So a lot of times I'll cut that 10 seconds out and people won't know that that song is missing like a whole minute or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, DJ K-Dawg can absolutely do this. This is what he does. This, you know, he's a career man at this. So I think it's going to be something where you just kind of have to find different pieces and parts and you put it together, and it is your own thing. And then no other university did this because we freaking made this song.
I think the Dynasty intro would be dope as hell, too.
That's what I did my Lamar Jackson hype video with. Yeah. I did the highlights from the Auburn game, and I threw the Jay-Z Dynasty intro in there, and then YouTube took that down. So there may be some copyright issues with that.
But, man, that instrumental is fire. Yeah.
Well, it looked like they experimented with a few different things Friday night. There's a few different things, and maybe they were testing it.
It's like road paint.
Maybe they were seeing.
You know, they do it on the highways, and they're like, we have like 10 different stripes, and they're looking to see which paint wears out first. So like, well, nobody cheered for that song. That's gone.
Yeah. Right.
People cheered a little bit for that song. Put a maybe by that one. They were road painting the crowd.
We got a hard maybe.
Yeah.
I tell you what, anytime Papa John comes in there and wants to burn rubber in the visitor section's face. That was awesome. That was
is that what he did for the blackout?
Yeah.
No, he does that every week. Have you never been to a game?
I went to Florida State.
He burns like Michelins every game. But the thing was, he did it right after Duke scored a touchdown. So Duke scores, and it's like he's coming out burning tires for the Duke.
Timing is everything.
Man, come on, man.
He's throwing a bunch of burnt rubber smoke in their face.
Yeah, man. He was just letting them know that, like, that was Bobby's way of saying we unleashed the Kraken.
Yeah.
Like, you can't – anybody in Louisville that's ever seen John Schneider out there partying, man, they know, like, when we released the Kraken, the shit just got real. Like, put your women and children to bed, because, like, man, we coming.
There's a few free pizzas with that ass whipping.
Bobby hit him up and was like,
eat this mediocre ass cold pizza.
I want him to ride out, pop a wheelie, and just toss open garlic packets at the fans, like at the opposing fans. Just smell like garlic butter.
Yeah.
Isn't that like
hit him with them hard ass breadsticks and shit? Like,
where are the limits on this? Can you shoot skunks out of a potato gun at the fans? I mean, is there rules?
I think
wild animals being shot into the visitor section.
I think the negotiation went down like this when Tom talked to Bobby about coming back, and he was like, you know, and we got a Monday night game against Miami. It's going to be our opening ACC, and Bobby's like, do I get to drive my Harley down the hill? And they're like, Bob, it's a bad idea. And then Papa John just like pops up out of nowhere, like, I got this. Yeah.
I think it works. And that's the car it took him forever to refine, right? Is this the same car?
No, that was a replica of the real car. He's got like a replica that I would stab Joe to have, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the leg.
Fortunate, you guys are pretty close to each other.
Man, I mean, that escalated quickly. Shit.
Do y'all remember Camaros, man?
Do y'all remember those old terrible Papa John's commercials with? And I think it ironically, I think it happened before his car got stolen, but it was him traveling across country trying to find Papa's car.
Oh yeah,
and they had that shitty cheap blues banjo that's like, it's Papa. I hope it came back. I hope that those memories came back and they're stuck in all of y'all's heads, because I'll never forget those horrible ads.
Can I
suggest
that?
We just found our third down.
He's probably got that on an 8-track in that car.
That's all. That's his ringtone. You know it. Or like, I wish if he were in my contacts and he called, that would be my ringtone for him. Like your phone just goes like, it's Papa.
I think we're getting it. So we got the bell. I want the bell. So the bell starts, boom. You know, real ominous. And then we got the,
it's Papa.
And then we get him to come out and peel tires every third down.
And then we cut
every third down. That would be dope if he actually had that burned through that many.
So he burns tires.
Okay.
Then we cut and we go deliverance, and it ends with, he sure does have a pretty mouth.
What if we did this? For third down, Papa just stands on our sideline, revving his engine, stink-eyeing the shit out of the opposing coach. Just mean mugging him from across there with...
They go high def on his face because they're probably too far away, and they just say... Look at the screen, coach from Duke. Look at the screen.
And his guy liner is just glistening.
That's right. Guy liner.
Cutcliffe's
30-foot eyeball
shit.
in the big screen.
Cutcliffe's pretty old. He probably can't see that far anyway.
Cutcliffe doesn't know who the hell Papa John is, man. He don't eat that shit.
Cutcliffe looks like a vegan to me. What do you think?
He'd be skinnier, right?
He looks like
he's pretty skinny.
Is he?
I think Cutcliffe, he looks like the kind of guy to me that when he goes to make his breakfast in the morning and somebody's like, do you need butter or jam? He's like, I'm just a simple man now.
He's gluten free. Hey, how do you know somebody's gluten free?
Uh oh.
Don't worry, they'll fucking tell you.
And apparently, gluten's okay to eat again. I just read that in the paper the other day.
Is it?
The rules keep changing.
Yeah, I was going to say 100
years. Eggs are good, eggs are bad. Cholesterol's bad.
That extends lifespan.
Gluten's good, gluten's bad. Dinosaurs are, what was the dinosaur thing the other day? There was a dinosaur thing. Oh yeah, they may not have roared now. That's
oh, really?
The recent thing I've read.
Were they like
maybe
dolphins?
They never roared. All right, here's the deal. Third down music, you each get to pick one song.
Oh, let me go last. I got to think.
Joe.
Victory.
Victory.
Triumph, Wu-Tang.
Triumph.
Wu-Tang Gravel Pit.
Wu-Tang Gravel Pit. All right, and I don't have one, so what I'll do is say Axel F from the 80s. It was in Beverly Hills Cop. No, Axel.
Axel Foley.
Great synthesizer song. That would get the crowd hyped.
And you know what else is great about that?
You know what else
is great about that movie? It's got the incredible line of, "Come on, brother, you got to put some bass in your voice. You can't say it like that. You got to be like, nah, I ain't falling for no damn banana in the tailpipe tree.
Banana tailpipe." I did love that. That was back when Eddie Murphy used to be funny, and then he got weird.
Well, you know what, man? You get caught with a hooker, and that'll do that to your career.
Yeah.
You.
What kind of hooker? Whoa.
Ask Eddie Murphy. Ask Marv Albert. Marv Albert.
Yeah, you'll take a hit for a while.
I think he got arrested with a transvestite in the car too.
Was it a transvestite hooker or was it just a regular hooker and then a transvestite?
Well, I mean, he was just giving a friend a ride.
What's wrong with that?
I mean,
there's nothing wrong with that.
There are four seats in the car, man. So it could have been a car
elevator. It was like
all I know is that Eddie Murphy went from being the raunchiest human being ever to being like, oh, I'm now Donkey and Shrek, so my wife don't leave me. And he was doing shit like what was that Spooky Mansion movie and. Man, Eddie Murphy
the
hadn't
haunted,
made any.
Yeah,
Eddie Murphy
Disney thing, right?
Yeah, he hadn't made a funny movie mansion. Since 96.
Oh, yeah. He went to
Life is Underrated.
Talking Animals, the Dr. Doolittle.
That's right. Daddy Daycare, was that him too? Yeah, or was that Ice Cube?
Professor Clump.
Oh, the Clumps were dope.
Hey, man. He was great as a donkey, by the way.
You can't go from Eddie Murphy raw to talking squirrels.
Everybody
and
does
shit.
That. Ice Cube went to the.
Daddy,
guess you love to hate to freaking or be there yet.
Yeah, but man, like if you watched
everybody sells out. Man.
If you watched Eddie Murphy raw, and then I showed you Norbit immediately after,
I love Norbit.
You would.
Norbit is great. You're crazy, man.
Norbit was...
I got kids, man. My kids love Norbit.
I bet you liked Bowfinger, too, didn't you? Vampire of Brooklyn owning ass.
Holy Man was dope.
No.
Yes. Mm. Loved Holy Man.
Hard disagree, man. Hardest of disagree. He seriously hadn't made a good
Joe
movie.
Disagrees with someone. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry that there's so many people I'm surrounded by that like shitty things. Like, it's not my fault. Blame the geography.
I'm just going to let you all keep rolling.
You like Vampire in Brooklyn, didn't you?
No, I didn't see that.
No, you didn't see that one?
No, I wasn't.
Go watch it. I bet it'll be your new favorite movie.
I'm going to check it out just because you don't like it. It's probably the best movie ever.
It's horrible.
The Wicker Man is the best movie ever. Have you seen The Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage?
I have not, no.
Please do. Please do.
It's good?
All right, so here's the deal. It's so bad that you actually enjoy it because you're laughing at how bad it is.
It comes full circle.
I'm not even going to bring it up. Just everyone go watch The Wicker Man. It is the most amazingly bad movie you'll ever see.
Nicolas Cage is the greatest example of, bro, you don't have to take every paycheck, right? Like, can we? I mean,
Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, I don't know. You know, nah, I mean, man, gotta look at his bank account.
Samuel L. Jackson still makes good. Like, I don't know. You can still take him serious because he's such a badass. But true, like now, true. Now you just look at your boy, and you're like, go find Ben Franklin's treasure, you nerd.
But yeah. Here's the deal.
Yeah, so, I didn't like that movie. Can we agree on that?
Oh yeah, Lost Treasure, whatever. I think there was a second one too, but no. Nicolas Cage is not going to rob me of another goddamn hour in my lifetime. Like, he'll always be the dude with the shitty mullet wig from Con Air that says "Put down the bunny." Like that Con Air accent.
How about Nicolas Cage and Kick-Ass? I didn't think he was that bad in Kick-Ass compared to Nicolas Cage movies.
Yeah, that was one of his better movies.
And it's okay to disagree.
Kick-Ass carried him, though.
He was like the game manager on that. She was awesome.
I think Nicolas Cage, I think the Flying Elvises.
The Flying Elvises?
And I think Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona
was dope. Like, yeah, that was a great movie. Yeah. He at one point, Nicolas Cage was good, but Face Off.
Yeah. That was when they were impersonating each other at the first time when they both had their faces swapped. And then John Travolta was trying to talk like Nicolas Cage. There's nothing worse than Nicolas Cage and someone trying to imitate Nicolas Cage.
There were,
I mean, that's probably got to be like...
I don't,
that's like Inception
down.
Level of garbage.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a worst garbage time period. A worst time period where there were two horrible actors like John Travolta and Nick Cage, but they were killing everything.
Yeah.
Like, they were murdering everything.
Keanu Reeves.
No, here's the thing about Keanu Reeves, because I was actually going to segue this into Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Keanu Reeves got the best agent in the business. Because how does... If you write John Wick, that movie was phenomenal.
Right,
there's
like
no
that.
Way you're thinking this movie was written
for Keanu Reeves. Yeah.
And I haven't watched it in 20 years, but when I was a kid, Speed was awesome.
He drove down to the actor labor ready, and he's the first guy on the bench.
I feel like what happens with Keanu is that it's kind of like going to get help at Home Depot. Yeah. You just pull up in a pickup truck, and you're like, "Yo, Keanu, we got this film to shoot," and Keanu's like, "What's it about, bro?" And dude in the pickup's like, "You're Jesus in a computer fantasy world. Man, just get in the truck, man. We already had Sean Connery turn it down. Like, everybody's turned it down. It's going to be good for you."
Yeah, John Wick was so good, I was like, this has to be a book series. I want to read it.
John Wick 2 is about to come out.
And I'm looking forward to that. Here's the thing, speaking of tough guy movies, is Jack Reacher. I love the books, but... The whole thing of Jack Reacher is he's 6'4", 250, and I can't think of a guy who's less of that than Tom Cruise.
And I also feel like Jack Reacher was Tom Cruise's alias at certain clubs before he made that movie. Can we stop casting sissies as badasses? Like, you're not. I've seen Tom Cruise in person, and I've seen him jump on a couch on the Oprah show. So you ain't convincing me that dude can whoop an army.
No, you're not. But here's the deal then. Okay, now replace him. So that's what I always think about. I'm like, okay, I'm complaining about Tom Cruise being this guy. I can't believe the author actually picked him, and he was like, okay, the name's going to bring me money. That's what he was thinking.
Yeah,
the name's going to bring me money. But usually the author is very protective of his story and his character. His character is a gigantic man. He's 6'4", 250, former military police, all this kind of stuff. Everything that Tom Cruise is not. So who would be the replacement?
The Rock.
See, here's the thing. I think he's too much eyebrows in Disney movies.
Liam Neeson's.
Man.
I mean, he's got the physical stature. He just, to me, the problem is I don't know if I can shake The Rock in, what's the movie?
The Tooth Fairy and all that sort of shit.
No, Need for Speed.
Fast and Furious?
Fast and Furious. I don't know if I can, because he gets kind of corny there.
What about Danny Trejo? Machete.
Oh, Machete. I think, is he a big dude?
That's a tough dude.
No, he's short.
Yeah, he's a short old guy, but he's tougher now.
He's the same height as Tom Cruise. So
I have a tough time figuring out who would be, what's the drugs and guns TV show? Sons of Anarchy. Who is the main bad guy, the older guy?
Hellboy?
Ron Perlman.
I think if Perlman got in better shape, he has that same kind of flippant, I don't give a crap about you attitude, that would be Jack Reacher.
Like, see, I'll try to read the books. Because
you read all the books. There's like 40 of them.
Dude,
my next show.
I'm on it. I cannot. I won't sit down and watch a Tom Cruise movie unless I've got just enough alcohol in me to be giggly. Yeah. And not like full on belly laughing, because I had never watched the Mission Impossible movies past the first one, and there was one that came on one day while I had like 30 minutes to kill, and it was the last 30 minutes of it, and there was literally nothing on there, so I flip it over, and man, this fool is riding around like shooting backwards on a motorcycle, like clipping people with a pistol off of a motorcycle while he's doing 80, and he's doing like donuts and stuff. And then they get in like a spin out, and he makes eye contact with a chick, and like while she's flying off, it is the most over the top bullshit. He did like a Hurricane Rana into a pistol whip on one dude, and I'm like, Tom Cruise can't do that. It's not possible.
Not physically possible.
No, and like, cause like, I'm not doubting his ability to, like, if I'm standing here, for him to leave his feet, wrap his ankles around my neck, but he doesn't have the force to throw me.
Whoa.
He ain't gonna do nothing once he gets there.
Pause.
We're allowed to talk cable stuff. That might be a step up. I don't know what's going on there. All right, well, that's it for Dude's Talking. You know, we talked third down music. We talked Tom Cruise wrapping his legs around
Joe's neck.
We talked about
you can't bring me down, though.
Dave's willing to stab Joe, his good friend, for Papa John's car, which, you know, he'll never get. Maybe he'll try to prove that and send evidence to Papa John's. But the reality is Louisville football moves on. So you're welcome for this little segment of Dude's Talking. We've got Cards Playing, noon, ABC. NC State, it's important that we win. Folks, don't be too upset if it's going to be a hard game, because NC State's going to try to bring it, and we know that Drew is hoping they have an emotional letdown.
Yeah, it's not going
to
be a hard game. 38-10.
38-10.
Louisville rolls.
We'll reset our predictions again.
42-17.
I forgot what I said.
37-20.
There we go. All right, 37-20.
You were 37-20, and I think I was 35-14 because they weren't going to hit any field goals, clearly.
There you go.
So.
That's right.
All right, folks, well, that does it this weekend. This week for the Crunch On Podcast. Don't forget to set us up on immediate download. You can find us on Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes Radio. You can find us on Google Play. Works with any podcast app that you got on your phone. And we're going to kick everything out usually Tuesday morning, so set us up, and we'll have your Cardinal conversation and whatever the hell else we talk about. Clearly, we covered that tonight. We'll catch you next week, and go Cards. Okay, once again, it's Mr. Light Skin from the city that don't sleep.